Bhagananjana Shilakaya Chakshur and Minitam Yenatas Mai Shigurave Namah. So as I mentioned, today we are... Should we do it simultaneous or... Okay. So as I mentioned before, we are commemorating the disappearance day of Lokanath Goswami. And I'd just like to speak a few words about him before we either go on to Bhagavatam or talk about Rathayatra, one of the two. So, Lokanath Goswami is mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's a very interesting verse. Sangi Gopal Bhatta Dasa Raghunath, Raghunatha Bhatta Gosai, Hara Lokanath. So, practically speaking, that's one of the only places where he's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Because when Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was talking and getting the blessings of the Vaishnavas for compiling the Chaitanya Charitamrita, he approached Lokanath Goswami, and Lokanath Goswami said, "Yes, you have my blessings as long as you don't mention me." This is Vaishnava humility. Okay. So, the history of Lokanath Goswami, just to give a very brief history, was that Lokanath Goswami left home at a very, very early age and went to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Navadvip. And so he arrived in Navadvip shortly before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was due to take sannyas. Now, Lokanath Goswami, the acharyas explain, had so much love for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that he could not bear to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taking sannyas. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised him, you go to Vrindavan. And of course it was understood that he was preparing the ground for the later Goswamis of Vrindavan, Rupa and Sanatana, the other Goswamis of Vrindavan. And so he left for Vrindavan shortly before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu advised him that shortly, in a short amount of time, I will join you. I will see you in Vrindavan. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, and after taking sannyas, after some time, he headed for South India. And when Lokanath Goswami heard that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was going to South India, he also headed for South India, because he wanted to have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's association. And so when he arrived in South India, he found out that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had gone to Vrindavan. And so then he thought, I better go back to Vrindavan. So then when he went to Vrindavan, he found that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had left Vrindavan. And then he was in Benares. So he thought, I better go there. And then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared to Lokanath Goswami. And he said to Lokanath Goswami, you just stay here in Vrindavan, and actually I will manifest my presence for you in Vrindavan. So from that day forward, Lokanath Goswami remained in Vrindavan. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's presence was manifested by the personal association that Lokanath Goswami had with the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. Of course, Lokanath Goswami had as his personal associate this personality named Bhugarbha Goswami. They were inseparable. Throughout the history of the Vaishnavas and our Sampradaya, you find great love between the Vaishnavas. Actually, they're inseparable. There's different types of friendship and loving exchanges. It's quite remarkable. So anyway, so Lokanath Goswami stayed in Vrindavan, in Braj actually. And one day he was given the deity of Radha Vinod. He had a great desire to worship the deity, so Krishna appeared before him and gave him the deity. That's pretty interesting. And Krishna says, here's my deity, better worship him. So after giving him the deity, the Lord just disappeared. So then Logananda Goswami was experiencing some anxiety. You know, how am I going to worship the deity? And the deity replied or spoke, "Why have you brought me here? I have come here personally just to satisfy your purpose. What do you want from me? You must now give me something to eat, quickly. I'm hungry." So these are the exchanges the pure devotees have with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So, of course, Loganatha Goswami was in ecstasy, and he offered fine rice to the deities and so many other preparations to the deities. So the villagers thought that, you know, we'll construct a nice bhajan kutir for Loganatha Goswami so he can worship his deity nicely. But Loganatha Goswami, in the mood of abject renunciation, refused any sort of housing. In fact, it's described that he would, for the rest of his manifest pastimes, he would keep the deity around his neck in a cloth bag, rather than out. Of course, he also established the Radhagokula Nanda temple in Vrindavan. But as far as this deity of Radha Vinoda, it was always around the neck in the cloth bag of Loganatha Goswami. So he stayed in the association of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. And he passed away. Anyway, there's one other story before he passed away. Of course, we know the story that he was the spiritual master of Narottama Das Thakur. Loganatha Goswami had taken a vow not to accept any disciples. And Narottama Das Thakur was determined to accept Loganatha Goswami as his mantra diksha guru. So Narottama Das Thakur secretly cleansed the place where Loganatha Goswami would evacuate and do stuff like that. And he did that for a year, and Loganatha Goswami discovered that he was doing that, and Narottama Das Thakur was so determined, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also instructed Loganatha Goswami to give Narottama Das Thakur a mantra diksha. Okay, and then, let's see, maybe we should read this. This is very nice. I'm going to read Narottama Das Thakur's prayers at the lotus feet of Loganatha Das Goswami. O Loganatha Gurudev, if you are pleased with me, please give me the shelter of your lotus feet and cast your merciful glance upon me. By your mercy, I can find the perfection of inner fulfillment. And by your mercy, I can someday meet Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Radha and Krishna. If you were not merciful to me, then what shall I do? Please just once fulfill my heart's desire. In the three worlds of birth and death, no one is more in need of your mercy. Please give me your mercy and give me a place at your lotus feet. Day and night, I sing the qualities and pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Still, the inner aspirations of Narottam for the service of Sri Sri Radha Govinda and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu can only be realized through your grace, O Loganatha Goswami Prabhu. Okay. So that's information about Loganatha Goswami. Okay. So, now we have a choice. We have a choice. Who would like to do Bhagavatam and who would like to go on to talking about the Rath Yatra? Who wants it? Everybody wants to do Bhagavatam, raise your hand. Okay, you win. Okay, so we'll go on to Srimad Bhagavatam. Do we have the Bhagavatam here, or do I have to just read off of there? We didn't have to vote the other way because I saw there were enough votes to Bhagavatam, okay? Okay, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, third canto, chapter 25, text 28. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Devahuti Ruvacha Kachit Twahi Uchita Bhakti Kedrishi Mama Gochara Yaya Padam Te Nirvanam Anjasan Anjasan Vasnava Vashnava Aham Devahuti Ruvacha Kachitvai Uchita Bhakti Kidrishi Mama Gochara Yaya Padam Te Nirvanam Anjasan Vashnavaham Devahutir Vacha Kachitvayuchita Bhakti Kidrishi Mama Gochara Yayapadam Te Nirvanam Anjasan Vashnavaham Devahuti Ruvacha Kachitvai Uchita Bhakti Kidrishi Mama Gochara Yayapadam Te Nirvanam Anjasan Vashnavaham. Okay. Devahuti Huvacha. Devahuti said. Kachet. What? Twahi. Unto you. Uchita. Proper. Bhakti. Devotional service. Kidrishi. What kind? Mama, by me. Gochara, fit to be practiced. Yaya, by which? Padam, feet. Te, your. Nirvanam, liberation. Anjasa, immediately. Anvashnavai, shall attain. Aham, I. Translation. On hearing this statement of the Lord, Devahuti inquired, what kind of devotional service is worth developing and practicing to help me easily and immediately attain the service of your lotus feet? What? Little by little. And you need to read it. Oh, you. So in other words, I'll read everything, then I'll give you the book. Okay. Yeah. Sure. Purport by Snavangre Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that no one is barred from rendering service to the Lord, whether one is a woman or a laborer or a merchant. If he engages himself in the devotional service of the Lord, he is promoted to the highest perfectional state and goes back home, back to Godhead. The devotional service most suitable for different types of devotees is determined and fixed by the mercy of the spiritual master. Okay. Okay, can I have the book back? Okay. Devahuti Ruvacha Kachitvaya Yuchita Bhakti Kidrushi Mahama Gochara Yapadam Te Nirvanam Anjasan Vashnava Aham. So Omagana Timiranda Shah Gananjana Shilakaya Chakshur and Meditam Yenatas Mai Shi Gurave Namaha. So, in this particular purport, Srila Prabhupada is addressing some of the, I don't want to say exactly chauvinism, but let's say discrimination that was based on the body that became prominent when people misunderstood the Varnashram system as a caste system. That is, you know, based on your birth, based on your body, you have specific rights in society, can do certain things, can't do other things. But we know Krishna in the Gita says, Chaturvarnamayashustam guna karma vibhagasha, that someone should be understood according to his guna and karma, as far, that means his qualities and work. So that caste system actually impeded or presented an impediment in people's understanding of the Vedic tradition. So, in other words, people were very upset with this, and they revolted against that caste system. And as we mentioned in our chorus that we're giving, they had different Shramana groups. That means people go to the forest and engage in harsh austerities. That revolted against this. They were internal Vedic revolt. People who revolted. That means they just went to the forest and they studied parts of the Vedas like the Upanishads, which were meant for the Jnanakanda. And there were external people who revolted, who took up Buddhism and Jainism. Anyway, we're not going to tell that whole story again, because we gave that explanation in our course. But there's an interesting story in the Mahabharata, and it's a story of a worm. A worm. So once upon a time, as all stories go, there was a worm. And the worm was crossing the road. And as the worm was crossing the road, the worm felt the vibration of an ox cart coming. Because worms don't have ears. At least the ones I know of. So it felt like, the road is, a vibration. Sometimes you can feel things in your body without hearing them with your ears. Just like I was just staying in Serbia, and there was a big rock concert about 500 meters away from where we're, and I could just feel the whole body shaking. Anyway, so this worm started to, squirm very quickly across the road. And Srila Vyasadeva happened to be there at the same time. And he said, "What are you squirming so quickly? What's your rush, my dear worm?" And then Worm Uvacha, the worm spoke. And he said, "I'm going quickly across the road because I'm going to get squished by this cart that comes around. I'm scared. Every living entity wants to protect its life." And Srila Vyasadeva explained to him that, if you get squished, then you'll work your way up the evolutionary scale. And we're not talking about the scientific, Western understanding of evolution. We're talking about spiritual evolution, which Srila Prabhupada said is real, you take birth as a worm, then you take birth, next life, a better worm, and a better worm, and the next species. I don't know the difference, what's the next species after worm, don't ask me. But you go up and up and up and up. And, eventually you enter the human form of life, either from a tiger or a cow like that, or a monkey. Different ways. So anyway, so he explained to the worm, this whole theory of evolution. You're going to come up, 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 so the quicker you die. And now this is not to say we should commit suicide. Or we should start killing worms so they can make their way up. So the worm said, "Jai, Hari Bol." So, no, there was more explanation to that. He said, "And when you get to the human species, you're going to get my association again. I'm going to become your guru, like when you become a kshatriya." The three higher castes, they have gurus, Brahman, kshatriya, vaishya. So he said, "I'll become your guru. You work way up gradually, become Brahman. And after you become a Brahman, you get to go back to Godhead." So the worm thought, "Wow, this is ecstatic." And most of us don't have so much patience. If I tell you, in 10,000 births, after going through all these things, you're going to go back to Godhead, you'll say, "Oh, the hell with it." You hear this all the time, it's taking too long. I've been a devotee now for, 5 years, and I still haven't seen Krishna or realized my spiritual identity. What's the use of this whole process? But we know from Rupa Goswami's description, Utsahanasya Dharya, Tata Karma, Pavartana, that enthusiasm, determinations, and patience are necessary qualities for advancing in devotional service. So this worm had that patience and enthusiasm and determination. Isn't it? Pretty good. So we can learn from a worm. So he made his way up. Gradually the story goes in the Mahabharata. He made his way up, a better worm than, human body, Shudra, Vaishya, Kshatriya, Brahman, and Srila Vyasadeva was there, got his blessings, went back to Godhead. Happy ending to the worm story. So, So what should we learn from this story? Should we say that actually there's just some bodies you just can't become Krishna conscious in? You know, what can you do about it? And so sometimes we find people say, well, as far as you ladies in the Krishna consciousness movement, the best you can do, you ever hear this before? The best you can do is become attached to your husbands. And then you will be so fortunate to take birth as one of us in the next life. Prabhupada is addressing that in this verse, actually, in purport. It's not that I'm just like going over to another topic. So, and then when you take birth as one of us, then you can actually make spiritual progress and go back to Godhead. So you should become attached to me, serve me, without any personal motivation. Any of you ladies ever hear this from your husbands? No, don't raise your hand. So, and then, by my mercy, you'll take a male body. So, this is not our philosophy. Actually, Dina Hina Yata Chilo Harinam Udirilo. That if one takes shelter of Krishna's name, they may be fallen or elevated, they can go back to Godhead. And guess what? In Kali Yuga, Krishna, it says, Kalo Shudra Sambhava. So all you proud men who are using that verse in Bhagavad Gita, it says, anyone who takes shelter of me, be they a woman or lower birth or kshatriyas or whatever, can yet approach the transcendental destination, are using that excuse to discriminate against people, should understand that all of us actually have lower birth in Kali Yuga. Especially those of us born in the Western world. Prabhupada said, you are of mixed castes of unknown origin. That was one statement Prabhupada made. like everyone's interested in finding out the roots, who is my mother, my mother's mother, mother's mother's mother. That's it. So it's not that, the men are more elevated than the women or women more elevated than the men. And Prabhupada actually said, if someone thinks they're a man or a woman, they're less intelligent. That's another statement. And Prabhupada said, by coming to the process of Krishna consciousness, the women become more intelligent. So, anyway, a little note there about male chauvinism. So that's the first point. We can only go till 9. So, another point is that the important thing is to take shelter of Krishna, utilizing the 9 processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing, chanting, and remembering, and also engaging in those 9 processes, as Srila Prabhupada indicates here, according to your psycho-physical nature. Each and every one of us has a specific psychophysical nature. That means, basically, we're inclined towards studying, we're inclined towards administration, we're inclined towards farming, we're inclined towards just work, we like money, whatever, because everyone likes money. Sorry. Of course, a Brahmin, he likes money for Krishna. Like Prabhupada said, you could take a picture of him like raking in the money. And a Kshatriya likes money because of what he can do for people. And a Vaishya likes to accumulate it. So money is a common denominator for all the Varnas. So one has to ascertain one's psychophysical nature. And generally, as Srila Prabhupada said, that is one of the spiritual master's duties, to understand what is the nature of the disciple and give them specific engagement in bhakti according to that nature. And we see in the Gita, that Krishna does exactly that with Arjuna as Arjuna's spiritual master. Like Arjuna has some other plans in the Gita. Arjuna just wants to give it all up. Right? Doesn't it? He just wants to give it up. You know, Krishna, here, I'm confronting my relatives, my grandfather, my guru. It's too much for me. Let me take sannyas. Sometimes we take sannyas for that purpose. Sometimes we take sannyas because we want mahaprasadam. Sometimes we take sannyas because we want respect. And sometimes we take sannyas because we want to dedicate our life to Krishna and preach, right? Different reasons. Is there another one? What's the other one? Oh, so you can do what you want to do and have a parallel line of authority in the Hare Krishna movement. So you can be independent. All right, so there's so many reasons. What's another one?
You become a guru for
that. Oh, you want a guru? But sannyasi is naturally guru in the Varnashram system. Because, I see that even if people are not my disciple, they would still offer obeisances anyway. Just like when I took sannyas, I thought, I get all the mahaprasadam. Six offerings a day, just like the deities. But when you get older, you figure out it's not so good for your health. So anyway, so Arjuna wanted to take sannyas just to give up his duty. And Krishna said to him, by your own nature, you're going to be forced to act. What does that mean? That means Arjuna was a kshatriya by nature. You know, kshatriya is one thing kshatriyas like to do is like if someone challenges them to a fight, they like to fight, don't they? That's just, if someone challenges a gambling match or a fight, it's just like, they're looking, they're happy when there's a fight. So, just like an example in Arjuna's own life, pastimes. When Arjuna was meditating to achieve weapons, he was worshipping Lord Shiva and the other demigods to get weapons so he could defeat the Kurus. One time when Arjuna was meditating, a big boar, which was a demon, actually went to kill Arjuna, wanted to kill Arjuna. And a boar means like a pig with big teeth on it, tusks. So, all right, so the boar was going, whatever boars do. And, they don't go oink oink like regular pigs do. So anyway, he was going towards Arjuna. And Arjuna naturally defended himself, which is all right. He pulled out his bow and arrow and went, at the same time, he saw another arrow hit the boar. And he looked up and there was a karata, a hunter like that. And he said, I shot the boar first. It was my arrow. What are you doing this for? And the hunter said, no, it's my arrow. And Arjuna, here he was meditating, trying to be peaceful, chanting his mantra. It's like sometimes, devotees are chanting Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and someone says, can you do some service? And goes, Hare Krishna, So, because that's not the mode of passion, that's the mode, anyway, different mode. So, but Arjuna was showing his mode of passion was showing. Hey, your mode of passion is showing. Anyway, so he had a fight with this karata. And then he ran out of arrows. Somehow or other, his quiver, which was supposed to contain unlimited arrows, ran out of arrows, and all he could do was put his bow around the karata. And then finally he was wrestling with the karata, and it's described the wrestling was so intense that there were sparks flying from both their bodies. And then he fell to the ground. Arjuna fell to the ground unconscious. And then he opened his eyes. He made a little Shiva linga out of the ground, just to worship Lord Shiva. put a garland on the Shiva Linga, looked up, and the Karata was wearing the same garland. So this is a story from the Mahabharata. And then, so then he saw this Karata is actually Lord Shiva. And then he said, you know, please give my humble obeisances, all glories to Prabhupada. A bunch of kalpa through the show, whatever he said. And he said, please excuse me. Please excuse me for fighting with you. And Lord Shiva said, no, this is, I'm very pleased. You know, you showed great prowess and courage and enthusiasm. You know, you're really a qualified kshatriya. And then he blessed him with his weapon, the, you know, Pashupat, the Trishira, the trident. And he said, you'll get that later after you come down from the heavenly planets. So the reason I'm telling that story is that it illustrates that what good will repression accomplish? In other words, you have your nature. It's going to come out one way or the other. Therefore, you should engage in devotional service according to that nature. So the question is, how can the spiritual master ascertain your nature? You know, does he have, are we inventing an ISKCON, a specific test, you know? It's very easy to understand one's nature. Just like there's another story from the Mahabharata that illustrates how to understand one's nature. This was the story when Arjuna had won Draupadi. Now, when Arjuna won Draupadi, the Pandavas were in disguise as brahmanas. And so, but they were pretty strong brahmanas with, you know, big muscles on them and everything like that. Not your ordinary brahmanas. Not your ordinary renunciates. So what happened is that Drupada, he wanted to know, you know, what sort of person is married my daughter, is going to get married to my daughter. Right? So he had a test. So when they came for the marriage ceremony, they came with Draupadi. This is actually before he found out that five people were going to marry his daughter. That was more of a shock. Anyway, he made a test to see what varna they were. So he put out different implements for different varnas. You know, he put out some shastras for the brahmanas. You know, Bhagavad Gita, whatever, shastras. And then he put out different weapons for kshatriyas. Like bows and arrows. And not like nowadays, you know, like an anti-submarine, whatever, you know. Anti-tank weapon or something. Yeah, smoke bombs or something. Or grenades. You know, the Vedic type of weapons. Then he put out some implements like for farming or money or something like that. Anyway, so he put out different implements for the four varnas. So the Pandavas walk in, dressed as brahmanas at that point. And they immediately go for the weapons. Wow, look at this bow. Wow, isn't that cool? Look at that sword. And it wasn't that hard for Drupada to understand. They're kshatriyas. It's a no-brainer, right? Because if they were brahmanas, they would have picked up the books. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. You know, it's just a simple thing. It's not difficult to understand what varna someone is. So, anyway, so then he understood. And he was happy also because he had made that test. You know, with the bow, stringing the bow and everything like that. So that only someone of Arjuna's status could win Draupadi. Of course, Karna tried, but Draupadi said no because Krishna told her he's not the guy. That also indicates in the Swayamvara, the woman had the choice to say no. It's not that she was forced, whoever won her in the battle, she was just taken away like the gold medal in the Olympics. You know, she said no. She had to have some good reason. Anyway, so that was how they ascertained. And of course, in the Vedic system also, we have this samskara we have for the children, isn't it? When they're 6 or 8 months old or something like that, we let the children choose between the Bhagavatam and the weapons and the farming implements. That's another way to choose. But it's quite easy. It's quite easy. So, therefore, the guru, when he's dealing with his disciple, should understand, if he's interested in their long-term spiritual welfare, that they have to be doing something that is in accordance with their nature. Emergency basis is another thing. On emergency basis, different varnas can do different duties. Of course, Kshatriya is not allowed to beg. But different varnas, they can switch certain duties sometimes, except with certain exceptions like that. But on a regular basis, people should be engaged according to their nature. Otherwise, the mind will not be stable, steady. Because as Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, very nicely in the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, that we all have not only different material nature, but different needs, you know, different physical, mental, psychological, and spiritual needs. And if we're to be steady in the progress of our devotional service, those needs should be met. For example, if I was not comfortable, at least semi-comfortable now, we're never comfortable in the material body, but if I was having a migraine headache right now, I would not be able to speak to you in Bhagavatam class. If I was in extreme tooth pain, you know, I wouldn't be able to speak to you. So there's certain basic needs. Of course, if one is an absolutely pure devotee, then you don't have to concern with eating or sleeping or any of those other things. But we, as aspiring, at least myself, as aspiring devotee, should be concerned with meeting our basic needs. Again, of course, not too much, as we find the Upadeshamrita, Achahara, Prayasascha, Pajalpa, Nivamagraha, not over-collecting, over-endeavoring, but the basic needs. And then we can progress in a steady way in Krishna consciousness. Anyway, so I had a lot more things to say, but we've been told we have to finish by 9 o'clock. I wanted to speak about the Sankhya philosophy, which I actually have some notes on, but I don't think there's any time. Because Lord Kapiladeva is teaching theistic Sankhya. Let's say most people outside of, you know, the Vaishnava understanding take Sankhya as the atheistic Sankhya being taught by this, you know, imitation Kapiladeva. But we're interested in the theistic Sankhya. Sankhya, the word Sankhya, just a little bit of information. The word Sankhya means to enumerate in Sanskrit. Sankhya. That means to number, to enumerate, to delineate. So in Sankhya, there's an enumeration of the different elements, you know, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, false ego, the perceptive senses, the active senses. And ultimately, in Lord Kapiladeva's understanding and presentation, Ishvara, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and the soul. Whereas in the atheistic Sankhya, these things don't exist. Anyway, so any questions or comments? We have 10 more minutes. Yeah. That's an interesting question. The question is it ISKCON's duty as a theological institution let me just try to rephrase your question. To engage people in business and other activities of other varnas. Of course, we do have training in administration. We do have some administration within the movement, isn't it? Oh, not in Croatia. Okay, sorry. So, I would say, I mean, if I have to give an answer about that. So, I would say that ISKCON should provide, you know, management training. Prabhupada talked about Varnashram College, actually, where you'd have brahminical training, management training, maybe some farming training. But Prabhupada also said, when he was asked, should we train people on business? Prabhupada had a very interesting answer to that. Does anyone remember his answer? You remember his answer?
I remember some answers.
But there was a funny answer Prabhupada gave.
It's funny.
Yeah, what is it?
One time he said that actually the parents, they train the children from birth.
Yeah.
And he gave the example of the Fearless and others, that they don't have to go to school or anything. Just by being with their parents, they learn all these things.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. But the funny answer I was looking for is, when they asked Prabhupada, should we train in business, Prabhupada said, why should we train people to cheat? You heard that answer, I think. Because business means, you know, you buy something at a low price, sell it at a high price, and tell people, for you, there's no profit. So, ultimately, I mean, in ISKCON, we should have institutions where we give the training which Srila Prabhupada indicated we should have, or give. Now, whether it is ISKCON's business to engage devotees in business, I have my doubts about that. That, you know, business, you know, as far as business, baisha activities like that, are best executed by cooperatives between grahasthas rather than by a religious institution. Yeah.
An example in our movement.
Spiritual sky.
Yeah. I was with Garga Muni and Brahmananda when they proposed to Prabhupada that we want to start a business called Spiritual Sky. So it was all right. It was locally, and it was in a temple in 26th Second Avenue. And then it was expanded. Then they wrote to Prabhupada, we want to buy some machinery to expand the business. And Prabhupada's reply was, we're not interested in expanding the business. We're interested in expanding book distribution. And then later on, they did it anyhow. And then Prabhupada said, well, and then they got so much criticism against Spiritual Sky. And Prabhupada's reply was, what's wrong with the business that gives $1 million every year to the Hare Krishna movement?
yeah, you can translate that. Okay, yeah, just I'll give you time.
Prabhupada pristupili što Prabhupada i pitali ga da li mogu pokrenuti posao koji se zvao Spiritual Sky, a bio je, dakle njegova baza je bila u hramu na 26. aveni i što Prabhupada je dao dopuštenje. Međutim, onda se taj posao nekako proširio, oni su htjeli kupiti neke strojeve da bi ga još više proširio, na što Prabhupada rekao da nema potrebe širiti bilo što drugo osim dijeljenja knjiga. Kako su ipak napravili, to, dakle povećali proizvodnju, a onda su ih neki bako su ih počeli kritizirati zbog toga, međutim, što pravo da je na kraju odgovorio, pa šta je loše u nekom poslu koji donosi milijune dolara našom pokretu za svjesnost Krišne.
So Prabhupada gave his instructions.
Maybe English?
She was translating from what Palananda Maharaj said. Oh, they couldn't hear. Oh, okay. So, do you remember the English, what he said? Or?
But I think it should be better if I just came to Maharaj because...
You want to take the microphone, Maharaj?
Okay.
I don't think it'll reach. That one's not going to reach. Step up to the mic.
Hello. 1968
Garga Muni and Brahmananda, they started the spiritual sky incense. I remember I was one time they came to Buffalo, Prabhupada, at the beginning of 69, and they were had a conversation. I was there. They were talking with Ray Rama, who was there, and Garga Muni and Brahmananda. And then there was a little boy called Bir Bhadra. The Bir Bhadra, he told Prabhupada, yes, they give us the money, and then we go and someone gave me $20, and then I went in the back and I never came back. And I looked at Prabhupada, I was shocked. You know, what is going on? And Prabhupada looked at me and smiled and said, business means cheap. And then after that, I had another interesting story about business. I was with Burjan Brew. This is in 68. We went to buy some paraphernalia for the Buffalo Temple. And there was Brahmananda. And we were at that time, it was 61 Second Avenue. And I looked at the incense burn. I looked at Burjan. I said, Burjan, don't buy that incense burner because it looks like it's very fragile. Brahmananda grabbed me by the arm, took me outside, and said, look, Prabhupada told us we're supposed to do business. And then Burjan bought it anyhow. We brought it back to Buffalo. We put some charcoal on it. We burned the charcoal. The charcoal burned, and the incense burned and caught on fire and burnt also. Then later on, Prabhupada was... When they expanded the business a little bit more, they sent Prabhupada a letter. This is when the business was in Los Angeles. They said, Prabhupada, we want to spend some money on machinery so we can expand the business. And then Prabhupada wrote them back a letter and said, no, we don't want to expand the spiritual guy's business. We want to expand book distribution business. But somehow or another, the Grihasthas did it anyhow. And then later on, they were giving $1 million, I guess it was a year, to the temples, and then they started to criticize Spiritual Sky because they weren't engaged in book distribution. And then Prabhupada's reply was, any business that gives $1 million to the Hare Krishna movement couldn't be bad. So my perception was that Prabhupada, he gave very clear instructions what he wanted, but if people didn't follow it and they did something else, and still he did the best he could to utilize their whatever gains they had in Krishna's service. So Prabhupada wasn't stuck with some preconceived conception of what to do, but he adjusted things according to the personalities, the time, place, and circumstances that he was dealing with.
Jai Prabhupada. Jai Prabhupada. Okay. So, but my personal experience is that... that when you have business mixed with brahminical activities, it's really not a good mix. Like Prabhupada would oftentimes call Garga Muni, Garga Money. So when we're dealing with saintly people or sannyasis or preachers of Krishna consciousness, the financial consideration shouldn't really be entering into the person's mind. And I've seen when sannyasis do try to do business, not you, I mean, it ends up as a disaster. So, you know, from hearing these stories, it indicates that Prabhupada would want businesses done outside of the, you know, the ecclesiastical structure of his company.
Prabhupada said about business, he said in between the devotees there should be any profit.
Yeah. We don't want to say, Prabhupada, because they're selling things out there. Anyway, that's what I'm saying. Though. Prabhupada said between the devotees there shouldn't be any profit. And when you're giving, when you're selling things to sannyasi, you should give for free. Anyway, so. Well, give to sannyasi. So, anyway, just one final story, and then we can end class. There was one devotee who was giving some money. There was a group of devotees that were giving some money to Prabhupada every month. And in order to, let's say, make more money, they thought, you know, we have to worship Ganesh. You probably know the story. I was with them, you know. So they installed Ganesh in their safe. So every time they would open up the safe, it would be, the bells would be ringing, the incense would be twirling, and they'd be chanting the Brahma Samhita prayers. Did you ever see this? It's really funny. I was with them, so it was a personal experience. Chintamani Prakata Sadmasa. Because, anyway, there's an indication that Ganesh can be worshipped to remove impediments in spiritual life. And sometimes in India, you see people worship Ganesh to become successful. In fact, they have this, what is it, Ganesh Chaturdasi or something like that, where they all go and worship the deity of Ganesh in Bombay, and the whole beach is filled with deities of Ganesh. And the municipal, you know, people have to come and clean up the whole mess. So these devotees were worshiping, and Prabhupada heard about it. And Prabhupada said, if you want to worship Ganesh like that, you have to give me minimum $100,000 a month. And so they did it. So anyway, they weren't doing business, they were doing something else. Which I'm not going to mention. What's that? They should have been doing business. And because they were sannyasis engaged in, you know, too much money collecting, perhaps they're no longer sannyasis today. So we understand that when one comes in contact, dhanam, janam, sundarim, these are very dangerous things for someone who wants to maintain a brahminical status or renounce this world. It can be very dangerous. So one has to be very careful around these things. And business, I mean, as far as business, just one other thing. It's better for sannyasis to keep their noses out of business. Just like one of my disciples asked me the other day, he said, the stock market, I want to invest in this way. What do you think, Maharaj? Please give me your advice and blessings. And I said, it's your choice. And not blessing this way, not blessing that way. It's your choice. I'm not going to give you any advice. Boss. So it's better for sannyasis and renunciates to stay, keep their noses out of that stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, in the Bhagavatam, it meant one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga is mentioned that the grahasas will come begging, right? The sannyasis for money. And we see that. Maharaj, my children need Pampers. Could you spare a few euros? Not quite like that, but it does happen. In Kali Yuga, actually Prabhupada told the story when he was a grahasta. There was another grahasta or a married person who lived next to him. And this married person would, during the day, put on sannyas robes. You heard this story. It still happens. And so during the day, he'd go out. This is what this cape is for, collecting donations. When I first took sannyas, I was told the cape is to protect you from women. You know, something like the bull, you know, the bull, bullfighting or something like that. But it's not much protection. But then later I found out it's for collecting donations. So I got a bigger cape at that point. Of course, with pockets in it. Of course, the traditional sannyas donations were grains and things like that, not money, obviously. So this cape is forget. So this sannyasi, this grahastha, would go out every day with his cape, collecting donations, bring it back to his wife, and dress in white again. So that's like a Kali Yuga sannyasi. Of course, in the Krishna consciousness movement, sannyasis do have to deal with money from time to time. But they have to be careful, as Srila Prabhupada said, as everyone does, that we should not misplace a single farthing. That was Prabhupada's nomenclature for money. So one has to be very careful because it can contaminate one. Okay? So I think we have to end because it's time for prasadam. Time for sannyasis to collect donations after... Oh. Get your capes out, Maharaj. All glories to his vine grapes to the Prabhupada.